Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that amends an unamendable amendment, attaches that amendment to an amendable amendment, and then votes against it. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my abstaining partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hi, Corey.
Now, as we speak, 100,000 people are marching through central London demanding a people's vote. Steve, how did you spend your Independence Day?
I was in the gym.
Nice. Not going to make any amusing... No.
It's just another Saturday to me.
So we were a bit harsh on the Remain campaign last week. So what we're going to do instead is we're going to awkwardly genuflect Jeremy Corbyn style to issues that Remain campaigners care about, like remaining in the European Union. And we're going to talk about the five ways Britain could stay in the European Union. We've got five scenarios in which we think Britain could remain in the European Union, and we're going to talk about them in order of least likely to happen to most likely to happen, with the small caveat that we've been wrong about most things in the 2 years we've been recording this podcast.
Yeah, so there is a very strong likelihood that everything we say here today is complete garbage, and so just bear that in mind.
Now, what we think actually is the least likely to happen is ironically the option that 100,000 people in London are marching in favour of, and that is the people's vote, or the second referendum, or if you're going to be technical about it, a third referendum, because we had one in 1975. And we think that this is the least likely to happen, mainly, I would say, because actually it's very difficult to see how we get a referendum happening in actuality. I don't see anyone promising a referendum at the moment apart from the Lib Dems and a few Labour MPs.
Yeah, pretty much. There is no real political power currently behind the idea of another referendum on the issue of Brexit. Whilst you do have aspects within the Labour Party who do seem to want another referendum, Owen Smith as an example of that, and you obviously have groups and parties such as the Greens and such as the Liberal Democrats, who are very much in favour and are campaigning quite actively for a second referendum on the Brexit vote. The reality is, in terms of their political clout, it's quite minimal. None of these groups are actually in a position of power within any of within either the Conservatives or the Labour Party. And in both instances, even if they do have some significant backers amongst parliamentary party members of Labour and the Tories, there isn't that many of them, and the parliamentary arithmetic just doesn't stack up.
I mean, I'd have thought that the most likely way we could have had another referendum is if someone had attached that amendment to the EU withdrawal bill and that amendment would have passed. As we saw, there wasn't even a majority in the House of Commons to get the EEA through, to get a soft Brexit through. So there wasn't really the support in the House to get a second referendum through. I mean, maybe the only way it could happen is if Labour changed their position, but we're going to talk about that more in the next reason, really. Now, we talked a little bit about the people's vote last week, and we said it wasn't really a very good idea. But also, I think why a people's vote is the least likely route for us to remain in the European Union is because, actually, I don't think if we had a people's vote, Remain would win that referendum. I think it's still more likely, actually, people would vote to leave the EU in that instance.
Yeah, an awful lot of the follow-back pro-European tribalists, best word I can think to describe them, they are definitely a political tribe these days. They are focused on certain polls which show that people dislike the way that Brexit is being negotiated or aren't happy with the negotiations. They are pointing out to polls which show that people do support the notion of a second referendum. But the reality is, when you actually delve deep into those polling questions, you end up almost undermining the actual case for a second referendum. So a classic example of this can be seen with the idea that if people are unhappy with how Brexit is being negotiated and being handled, they will suddenly become Remainers. They will vote again to support a second referendum, and they will vote to stay in the EU. Now, the reality is that within that group of individuals who are unhappy about how things are being negotiated are also going to be an awful lot of Brexiters, people who voted to leave, because they're looking at the way that the government is handling things, and maybe they're looking at it just in general and thinking, God, this is an absolute farce, I'm not happy about this. Maybe they're looking at it and kind of going, oh no, that looks like we're going to have a customs union of some sort. Actually, I don't like that at all. And so there are a myriad of outcomes which can feed into that notion of a Brexit being handled badly. So that is not a sign that people are actually going to suddenly change their minds
no.
and vote to remain.
That view is basically Dan Hanan Douglas Carswell's view, isn't it? Now, you don't have to think that they're right, but what they are saying is we should still leave the EU, but the government is handling the negotiations badly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think the other thing that's true, Matt Singh, who's a noted pollster and number cruncher on these sorts of things, he likes pointing out that campaigners are right in that there are some polls that show a majority of people actually want a referendum on the Brexit deal, until you say that the option would be either to have that Brexit deal or remain in the EU, at which point support for that referendum plummets. And I think what's definitely true is that there's a lot of cherry picking taking place among Remain campaigners on the polls that come out saying whether people think Brexit's a good idea, a bad idea, whether people want to remain or leave. And I think the YouGov polling tracker saw Remain get their biggest lead in terms of people thinking that Brexit was a bad idea in months. Problem was, it was only, I think, 6 points in it. I think that lead would get eaten up over the course of a referendum.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that the Remain campaign blew a big lead last time, and I haven't really seen any indication that the campaign would be any different this time around. What I see instead, I just see a lot of people saying that people were stupid if they voted leave, or essentially a closet racist.
For an organisational grouping, and for kind of an activist base, which is all about trying to acquire a referendum in the short term, because the reality is, if you're going to have this referendum, it needs to be quickly, because otherwise Article 50 will expire and we will be outside of the European Union, in which case the referendum is somewhat redundant. For an organisation that's looking to move very, very quickly, they're not seemingly showing much sign of actually having a plan for what to do if they do secure a referendum. You've still got the same people who are running the Remain campaign, such as Will Straw, out there pushing for the same for this second referendum, and they were bad at it last time, so why do we think they're going to be different this time round? And not only that, not only are these people who have been quite bad at running referendum campaigns, see both the AV campaign and the Brexit campaign, they're also going to have to deal with another factor in this second campaign, if they get it, that they didn't have to deal with on the first time round, which is people who voted Remain, the first time round, but they're then going to vote to make sure we leave. You know, and I would kind of include myself in that potentially. Because to be quite honest, whilst I think Brexit is a terrible idea, democracy does have to mean something. And if the choice is going to be between a deal of some kind and, say, you know, going back into the EU, which is essentially what you'd end up with as in the most likely scenarios of having this vote, you know, why would I, as someone who values democracy, vote to remain? To me, it just spits in the face of the previous vote. And yes, it was technically a non-binding referendum. Yes, you are absolutely within your rights to vote how you wish and to make all the arguments you wish. But there's going to be an awful lot of people who are not highly politically motivated, who are going to see us reopening an issue that they thought was settled.
Well, people are right when they say that the 2017 general election electorate was not the same as the 2016 referendum vote. But I think So in other words, the people who voted in that general election were more Remainy. But I think it's also very true to say that non-voters who didn't vote in the general election will come out for another referendum.
Yeah, quite likely, especially as most of those individuals, from what we can see from the data, were individuals who voted to leave.
Hmm.
So, at that point, you're then just trying to bank on the notion that the demographics have shifted enough by the elderly voters who voted to leave dying off, which isn't a particularly pleasant thought and not something you should really be banking your campaign on.
No, I mean, I suppose the argument for a second referendum is essentially the kind of Tony Blair argument, isn't it? Where we say, OK, well, we want to buy a house in this particular area, and therefore it makes sense that we get to look round that house and have us decide whether we're going to move to this house before we go there, rather than just having to go there, almost rather than being forced to go there without having a proper look at what we're getting, because otherwise you just stay in the house you're in at the moment.
Yeah.
Only problem is, in the scenario in which we're in, we've already told the landlord, we've given notice to the landlord to leave the house.
Yep.
That's the people's vote. It doesn't look very likely, which probably means it's the most likely to happen in actuality. What could the second scenario, which might happen but we think is not very likely, is that probably Labour in this scenario, that Labour changes its stance to an explicitly anti-Brexit stance, wins a general election, and uses that election win as a mandate to stop Brexit and calls the whole thing off. Now, this essentially was the Bandosaurus Rex position. Our good old friend Owen Smith, who spent a Labour leadership campaign joking about the size of his own penis. As well as that, his other main policy was that Labour should become an explicitly anti-Brexit party. And that was so popular with Labour members that Owen Smith received, I think, 38% of the vote in the leadership election in the two-horse race. And it doesn't look very likely that this will happen either.
No, and there's one very good reason for that, and it's named Jeremy Corbyn. The Labour leadership is not pro-EU in the way that is required to back this second campaign. Jeremy Corbyn is surrounded by individuals of the Bennite school of political thought who are all very anti-EU. Whilst I don't think the European Union is a kind of a raison d'etre in any form for Jeremy's beliefs in the way it was for Tony Benn, it is not something he overly cares about. It's not a hill he's prepared to die on. And I think when you've got that, you've got Seamus Milne whispering sweet political nothings into his ear about how the EU is going to stop him from nationalising everything. You know, it's very difficult to see how the Labour leadership makes that transition to a more to an explicitly anti-Brexit policy agenda.
I think the only way that happens is if a scenario we're going to talk about later happens, in which public opinion is so, essentially, rather than it being like 50-45 in thinking that we should remain in the EU and Brexit's a bad idea, it probably literally needs to get to 80-20. Or 90%, like 90% of people thinking it's a terrible idea, which I don't think is very likely unless something catastrophic happens. I mean, and I think you can also see, we've talked before as well several times, that Jeremy doesn't really care about the EU that much, but is prepared to compromise and be Remainy enough to get into power. And at the moment, being explicitly anti-Brexit is, I think, too Remainy to get into power, really. We've seen a lot of the surrogates for the Labour leadership, people like Aaron Bastani, Owen Jones, Ash Sarkar, they've been on Twitter, Matt Sopcousins as well, who've been out and been quite vocally hostile to Remainers, actually. I think Matt Sopcousins essentially went round saying that Brexit was some sort of minority interest, a bit like playing croquet or going to Waitrose.
Aaron Bastani has been spending his free time simply trying to whip up conspiracy theories about a small little group of campaigners called Our Future, Our Choice, who are young people, most of which I believe are Labour Party members, if not all of them, and has been basically saying how they're all funded by the Tories.
Which is really, really weird, because A, it doesn't seem like it's true. Most of it seems to be crowdfunded. B, I don't see him getting that outraged about the Leave campaign, and I could be wrong, but please don't tweet me Navarro Media videos if I'm wrong. But I don't remember him getting this outraged about the Leave campaign, which was funded, at best, it was funded by disaster capitalists like Legatum. At worst, possibly funded by the Russian government. But that's apparently fine. We should send out outrage instead for a few lefties who share an office with a bunch of Tories.
Whilst simultaneously, Aaron Bastani has been spending his time complaining about how these, the Our Future, Our Choice campaigners have been targeting Labour. As rather than focusing their time and energy and time on the Tories, which is wonderfully hypocritical.
They had the nerve, Steve. They had the nerve to go to a political event and make a political protest. They started talking about politics at a Labour Party event. Now, I don't know if you've been to Labour events, Steve.
No one talks politics.
No.
It's true. They spend all their time arguing over the minutes of the meetings.
I think you'll find they weren't accurately taken, Steve.
But yeah, essentially, Our Future, Our Choice turned up to Labour Live, which wasn't as much of a disaster as everybody thought it would be, and held up a banner which was protesting Jeremy's stance on Brexit, to which Aaron Bastani stated on the Daily Politics that, oh no, it was absolutely right that they should have been thrown out of the event because they were, causing a public nuisance. It's a politics festival. Like, you're telling me that you weren't expecting this? You're telling me that the security weren't expecting something like this?
I think you'll find that it's very rare you have banners at political events, especially banners with political messages on them.
Yeah, especially in the Labour Party. It's unheard of.
Yes. Maybe the only other way that Labour could change its position is if there are debates at conference in which policy motions are decided. Only thing is, the leadership and Momentum as well, and we've talked about this before, don't really seem to want Brexit being discussed as part of a vote at conference. So I think Young Labour were having a debate about whether they should Young Labour's policy motion to conference be about mandatory re-selection or should it be about Brexit?
Yeah. And despite the fact that as policy choices go, Brexit is going to be much more pertinent to, young people, much more pertinent and much more likely to have an impact on the lives of Young Labour members than mandatory reselection ever will, though. The decision was made by the Young Labour executive to send off an amendment about mandatory reselection. The other thing that's really important to kind of take into account when we're talking about Labour potentially shifting its Brexit policy, though, is that if something were to make it to the conference floor, it would almost certainly pass. The official position would be set as being an anti-Brexit one because the Labour membership is much more staunchly pro-EU than the Labour leadership currently is. Now, that's one of the reasons that Jeremy Corbyn has been having to have Keir Starmer walk a very, very delicate path, because it's one of those issues where if they get it wrong, it is the sort of thing which could potentially lead to, another leadership challenge which he might lose. It's not likely, but it might be possible. But equally, as a result of that, as a result of the wider political implications of Labour becoming more pro-EU and its effect on the likelihood of winning a general election, a significant part of the unions who have a say in how Labour is governed have been trying to position everything in such a way as so that it doesn't happen. Those votes never actually get to the floor, and instead we do end up talking about mandatory reselections or nuclear missiles or whatever, just as a way to try and just avoid that debate.
I think, to be fair as well, to a lot of the kind of the new left, and especially the kind of left-wing Momentum members who are behind Jeremy, I think support Jeremy's stance on this. And we've been quite fair to Jeremy as well. I think it's hard to have a Brexit policy for Labour that pleases everyone. The impression you get when you listen to them speak is that they are more passionate about issues like economic injustice, social injustice, homelessness than Brexit. And obviously that's a perfectly valid position to have.
Yeah.
I think you've almost got two very different movements, like youth movements, which are centred around protest, venturing about marches, about trying to make a difference. And it's almost that they're colliding into each other. And I think both misunderstanding each other because both can't quite understand why the other doesn't think that their issue is more important than the other one. And so I think they're both talking at cross purposes as well, which doesn't really help. Moving on from that, though, the third thing we think could happen is that the government revokes Article 50, that the government realises that implementing Brexit with the red lines that May has set out isn't possible, that you have to remain in the single market in some form, you have to remain in the customs union in some form, realises it's impossible, and so revokes Article 50. And essentially Brexit doesn't happen, or some sort of Brexit in name where it doesn't happen. That could happen.
It could happen, but it is very unlikely to be the case. If for no other reason that this would entail the government actually being very open, admitting, mea culpa, we got it wrong. Which is not a very good look on a major issue such as Brexit. And let's be honest, do we honestly think that Theresa May's government has got that kind of self-awareness to make that kind of connection in their own heads, let alone the willingness to actually act on it?
I mean, when I think of the words self-awareness, awareness of flaws, willingness to make mistakes, the person I do think of is David Davis, but I take your point.
Yeah.
I think May's position has always been more a kind of stoically going forward with this very British, we think it's a bad decision, but we're going to go through it anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't think it is likely. I think what the only way maybe that Article 50 could have been revoked or maybe extended is if some sort of provision had been attached to the EU withdrawal bill. That isn't really going to happen now because the meaningful vote amendment didn't pass because Dominic Grieve got some sort of compromise with the government, voted against his amendment. And now
may or may not have secured a meaningful vote on the deal. We're not entirely sure. It may be up to the Speaker to decide if a vote is had. It's a confusing constitutional mess.
Yes. The Tory Remainers appear to be keeping their powder dry for the next big battle, which is maybe of a customs union.
Maybe. Or alternatively, they've just run out of powder now and they've realised that they're not actually going to be able to make any wins.
Yes, and I think one reason that the government won't revoke Article 50 is partly you'd get a mass of resignations from people like Boris Johnson, David Davis, who would start doing leadership bids.
Well, let's not go too far. Boris Johnson would definitely go. David Davis would threaten to resign, but then would still stay despite having said he would.
That's true. But I think there would be a vote of confidence in Theresa May,
yeah,
at least in her leadership of the Tory party, straight away. And it would be it would be the end of her premiership, almost certainly.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're getting to possibilities that we think actually are fairly likely. And the fourth one is one I've essentially on the podcast been blindly optimistic would never happen. And that is that Britain crashes out without a deal. So it's quite possible if Britain crashes out of the EU without a deal, the economy crashes, we see big lines of lorries outside Dover. I think in the Sunday Times a few weeks ago had a big story in which essentially not even the apocalyptic scenario, but a scenario level down from that was that Britain runs out of medicine in 2 weeks or something daft. And that happens, there's complete chaos, and Britain then goes to the EU, crawls back, begging to let us back into the EU.
Yeah.
And I've always assumed that isn't likely because that there would be some sort of desperate 11th hour deal made. Problem is, as time ticks on and ticks on and ticks on, and it becomes even more obvious the government has no plan, no idea. May's just trying to delay things and kick the can down the road rather than make decisions to try and keep her party together. Actually, it becomes more likely that no deal might happen. I mean, interestingly, Guy Verhofstadt, who is, I think he's the EU negotiator for the EU Parliament, isn't he? So he's essentially the one who recommends the EU Parliament whether they accept this Brexit deal or not. He was talking to MPs this week and he said that if you look at the red lines the British government has, then Britain essentially ends up with a fairly loose relationship with the EU similar to that Ukraine has, and it will take 10 or 15 years for Brexit to be negotiated. And it turns out the MPs, a lot of them anyway, who spoke to Guy Verhofstadt, were really shocked that would be the case, which is weird because if they listen to this podcast, they'd know actually that isn't that shocking.
Yeah, it is absolutely staggering that the MPs who are making up the Brexit scrutiny committee, in effect, aren't aware of these basic facts of that's roughly how long it takes to organise trade deals between the EU and other and third party countries. You know, we as lay person commentariat people are aware of this, and yet they are not.
Because, well, we did a podcast on various scenarios and read an Institute for Government report about the different models and the Ukraine models mentioned in that. I mean,
it's not difficult. It's not, you know, this isn't rocket science. This is basic stuff which you would hope our legislators who are actually specifically focusing on this area would be aware of, and yet a number of them are not. It is not a good position for Parliament to be in, and it's that kind of lack of knowledge which I feel is what increasingly makes the likelihood of us crashing out much more likely.
Well, and also because, as Verhofstadt also said this week, any deal probably needs to be sorted out by the EU summit at October at the very, very latest, because it will take 6 months to agree and ratify any deal. I believe it took 6 months to ratify the EU deal with Canada, which was then put at risk because a Belgian regional parliament voted against it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we are running out of time, and it is, even if we get some sort of transition deal, they're still not quite sure about the transition deal and the Irish backstop, the madness. But also, there's a very, very cavalier attitude being taken by this government for business. I mean, Boris Johnson, for instance, here, there were leaked remarks of him, I think, last week at a dinner saying that we should be more like Donald Trump in negotiating Brexit, somehow, I think, causing chaos in the hope that might give us a half-decent deal. He's also had comments reported to The Telegraph this week saying that business might not like Brexit. And he said Gove business, except he didn't say Gove listeners. He said a very similar four-letter word. And on the Not Enough Champagne grapevine, we know someone who knows someone who knows someone who knows someone who knows someone who might know something about Boris Johnson. And the gossip apparently is that Boris is trying to get sacked because Boris would rather be on the back benches and be more likely to have a leadership challenge to May, because he can sit there and say, "Ah, well, if I was running this Brexit would all be going smoothly and much better than it is under this May woman." And you can kind of see that. And that does make sense and answers a listener's question we tried to answer a few months ago as to why doesn't May sack Boris. The final way, and maybe the most likely, it seems that we would stay in the EU, is that essentially what we do is extend the transition period. And I think at the moment there's a notional transition period, I think until the end of the current EU budget cycle, which I believe is the end of 2021. And actually what happens after that is we keep extending it and extending it, because as Verhofstadt has said, it will take 10 or 15 years to undo the last 40 years of British law, and essentially everything fossilises and we end up not really having a Brexit at all.
Yeah, because during that time period we'll change governments 2, possibly 3 times in all likelihood. And, you know, different policy agendas will be set. Demographics of the country will have shifted significantly. Who knows, maybe by that point the Liberal Democrats will have overtaken the Tories as a second party. God only knows.
Really?
Anything is possible.
I think it is the most likely, if only because I'm still optimistic about these things. Even now, after 2 years with you in this bunker doing this podcast, I'm still optimistic that maybe things will be all right. Maybe Britain won't crash out without a deal. Maybe actually we'll just extend it. And it feels, one thing that you get with talking in the reports of people across Europe and their attitude to Brexit is that they see the British, it seems to have damaged how they see the British, in that they've always seen this as being quite pragmatic, quite hard-nosed. And actually the pragmatic thing to do would be to extend the transition period, just buy more time. And if you're going to extend the transition period, it would make sense to extend it for the next EU budget cycle, which I believe is every 5 or every 7 years.
Something like that.
At which point we may well end up fossilising. And I think I think that's more likely than us crashing out without a deal, because I think that something will be put together. Although, I mean, David Davis talks about, in kind of hushed, kind of reverent tones, about essentially the like 12 hours before Article 50 is meant to run out, we'll be there kind of running around getting a deal together to make it all sound very exciting. I don't know if it'll be quite as rushed as that, but I think something will be put together that means apocalypse is avoided.
I'm not so sure. I think on these sorts of things, I'm more pessimistic than you are. As I said, I think we're only at the around about the 40% level for, you know, dropping out onto WTO rules currently, but that can change very, very quickly. And ultimately, whether you think we're going to be dropping into WTO or going Brexit in name only ends up based around the notion of how optimistic or pessimistic you are. And for me, it's only the fact that Theresa May is somehow, by the grace of God, holding on to power, and that's only been by kicking the can down the road, that we're only at 40%. I think once May goes, or once May has to make it, is forced into making a choice, we end up into a 50 to 60% for WTO, just because the Brexiteers are ideological about this. They have no pragmatism when it comes to the EU.
There, but for the grace of Mog, you might say.
And on that terrible pun.
On that note, well, actually that leads us into next week's show, in which we're going to talk about the rise of the far right in Britain and across Europe. Can't really make that.
There's no joke to make there. It's all very depressing.
In the meantime, we have websites at notenoughchampagne.com. We've got a Facebook page, facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. James Cram was kind enough to design our logo. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. Dave Depper designed our particularly rocking theme tune, Fucky Good Times. You can follow me on Twitter at Paperback Writer.
I'm at Acoustic Radical.
Happy plotting.